Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Dr. Guy's Gumbo Talk. So I am so delighted that you guys have decided to join us again this Sunday evening. And so our topic for this evening is marriage obsolete? And so I have a couple here that is a powerhouse when it comes to couples counseling. So I am really going to enjoy this topic tonight because this is Steve's topic, you guys. I'm just going to go ahead and put that out there. Steve will be joining us. Steve and Stacey will be joining us both a little bit later on in the show. But I'm going to go ahead and introduce the Rutledges, and they have been doing couples counseling for a while. And so I'm going to allow them to introduce themselves, the Mr. and the Mrs., and kind of give their view on just the question, is marriage obsolete?
Well, husband, I'm going to let you go first.
Okay, well, I'm Michael, and for sure marriage is not obsolete, not by any stretch of the imagination. But the thing is that it takes maturity to dive into that well of marriage, and oftentimes we don't have it. Wife?
Yeah. And this is Zandra. And the thing about marriage, what is the purpose of it? That's what we should look at. And if you notice that a lot of relationships today are not working out because we have problems with trust, we have problems with infidelity. And so what's going on is because because there's no connection besides, let's get together, let's live together, let me test you out, I don't like the test drive, see you, that's a problem. So marriage is not obsolete. What marriage does is it helps with the trust factor and the relationship and your children. So what do your children say? Well, my mom and daddy not married. They just shacked up.
Okay.
So what kind of legacy does that leave?
All right. So starting off, I hear that you both are in support of marriage and you're saying that it's not obsolete. So what do you guys think about the fact when we look at this concept of marriage, right? Historically, we know that this concept of marriage that we now have, that people, you know, kind of fall in love with each other, this idea behind it being romanticized, that you find someone, if we were to say biblical, you find someone that you're evenly yoked with and you fall madly in love with them and you spend the rest of your life together. So that's really like a late 1800 concept, even later. 19th century concept of marriage. Like the earlier definitions of marriage were really arranged marriage, and they were based on the needs of families being able to prolong their legacy and being able to make sure that their daughters and sons were marrying people that financially were yoked versus individuals who fell in love with each other. So if we look back to like the earlier definitions of why people got married and kind of what we have now, this idea behind people falling in love with each other, there's a big change, right? Like, and now people are more likely to get divorced. We know that the current divorce rate is 50%, and prior years, people stayed together longer, right? And we know some of that has to do with women's inability to provide for themselves and their children financially. So that kept a lot of women in marriages. And so now that we have this romanticized idea behind marriage, what are the benefits for people to be in marriage?
Well, let me say something. So you said in the past, because women's inability to provide for themselves, is it we have more divorce now because of the social environment with all the what everybody's doing? And back then, we didn't have all this talk about putting the sexuality out there, because now sex is this whole being by itself. It used to be something sacred. If we take this back to the garden-style marriage, which is what the Bible defined as marriage, you know, two people coming together, creating a family, creating the legacy, you know, with the children. And not only that, but Adam and Eve, there was no secrets between them. There was nothing between them. The connection, the commitment was there. And so you didn't have all these diseases, because if they've only been with each other, you're not going to have that, number one. So in the past, the divorce rate, was it because the women could not support themselves, or is it because of what we really thought of a marriage and what even the world thought marriage was? But now we have a new scheme on it, and so, you know, we follow these trends.
Okay.
That would be my
question. So not so much that women's ability to provide financially for themselves has impacted that, but that it's more trendy aspects of it, possibly.
Possibly.
Okay.
Wow.
Michael, were you going to
comment? Well, you know, the last thing you said was is there a benefit to it,
mm-hmm.
to marriage? And I'm thinking of even more than a benefit of just flat out like black and white companionship. It's also within the confines of a marriage. There is also where, if it's done right, there is an intimacy that cannot be achieved. I don't think it can be achieved in that type of relationship if the marriage itself isn't the foundation of it, because there's a certain type of security that I know of, and I can only speak from my marriage experience. There's a certain type of security in that relationship that I have seen not afforded to people that were in a living together relationship. As Zunder spoke to a legacy, what type of legacy do you have as a real, you know, family if there's not the real family? And I know that in 2019 the face of family has changed in more ways than one. But that's my biggest benefit. The security, that intimacy that I know that I have, and being able to surrender everything that I have, all the secrets, all my inadequacies, all my weaknesses, and knowing that they're going to stay there because I'm doing my part to make sure that that marriage doesn't come to an end.
Okay. And, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because there was one article that talked about marriages and obviously current day marriages, and again, this idea behind is marriage obsolete? Are people still buying into it? And so, in that article, they mentioned the concept of commitment, and mm-hmm. some of their pros in favor of marriage was that people feel that there's more of a commitment if you marry someone, or if they decide mm-hmm. to go ahead and get married. And then they took a poll. And so the poll that they had was they polled individuals that were in long-term committed relationships and they were not married versus the individuals that were in relationships and they were married. And their okay. questions were in the direction of asking, could you still have commitment in these relationships? And their results mm-hmm. indicated the same. And so I thought that was a pretty interesting research, that both of the populations that they polled, their statistics were close enough to say that individuals in long-term committed relationships that were not married, still their scores were very similar to individuals in marriages as it related to this concept of commitment. Any thoughts on that?
That is pretty interesting. Well, I don't know who they were polling. But we counsel couples who are like government paperwork married, and couples who are not, and on a more consistent by and large basis, It's been our experience that the couples who have not actually taken the plunge into marriage are the ones who are more concerned about whether they can trust the commitment, quote unquote, that the other person made.
Okay.
That is true. It has come down.
I'm sorry, Michael. It was kind of fuzzy. I couldn't hear you. Could you repeat that for me?
You mean just the whole statement I just made?
I'm sorry. Yes, it was kind of fuzzy.
Okay. I was going to say, by and large, when we're working with couples who are either married or they're just living together, by and large, the biggest challenge with the ones who are not married is to be able to trust the other's commitment to the relationship. Because nine times out of ten, what they're coming for is because someone in that committed relationship actually did not hold up to the commitment.
Okay. And the problem is because the biggest problem is they really didn't have a commitment. That was the whole thing. All they did was move in together. There was really no commitment, because what says that I belong to you and you belong to me? We have no paperwork. We have nothing. We just moved in together and we were having sex. And that's what we find, that when you talk to them and you ask them about, well, what commitment do you have? Well, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. Well, did you say we're going to be together? We're not going to see anybody else? Nope, they didn't say that. But he knew or she knew because we're together.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, you know what? I was just thinking when you guys were saying the commitment piece. And I can't remember specifically in the article, and I probably would need to go back to look at it. But so this concept of commitment, is commitment mm-hmm. different than individuals being monogamous, or is it one and the same? Like, if you're committed, you're monogamous, or can you be committed and not monogamous? Does that make
sense?
Wow.
I never thought of those questions. That's an awesome question you're asking, though. I never thought if you can be committed but not. Right now, as you ask it, I don't see how you could be committed and not monogamous, because, I mean, if you're committed, that means you're giving everything you have to the commitment, to the thing that you're saying I'm committed to. You're giving everything to it. And does that include monogamy? Well, for me, it does, because I'm bringing everything that's me, everything that I have to this relationship.
Well, if you look at definition, if we go just Webster definition, commitment is the quality of being dedicated to that cause or to that activity. So if I am monogamous, I am only going to be to one person, to one thing. So committed, I'm going to be dedicated to it. Monogamous means I'm just going to be with that one person.
So they can be committed but not be monogamous, right?
How can you be? Because if you're committed, you're dedicated to that person. So that means you're not going anywhere because you're dedicated to that person. If you're monogamous, I'm only with this person. So can you be
committed?
Go ahead.
You're committed to staying, right? Like, committed could be, I'm committed to staying in our relationship. Like, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, and I was thinking, well, maybe we should put some context on this, on the question that you're asking. I mean, for instance,
mm-hmm.
Can I be committed to my job? Sure, I can be committed to my job, but if things start to go awry, well, my commitment might change more from my job to what's best for me.
Mm.
But there's still a commitment there. But if we're talking about a relationship where these two people have decided, well, it's just going to be the two of us against the world exclusively, with no one coming before you, no one coming before me, and our total job is taking care of each other in every sense of the word, from head to toe, fingertip, front to back, inside out and outside in, well, I don't see that as being able to work.
I don't see where you can be committed and not monogamous if you're in a true relationship, even though monogamy, if we go again with that definition, is the practice of having a sexual relationship with one partner or the practice or state of being married to one person at a time.
Correct.
So now we know that a lot of people are married and they say they're committed. They have a committed marriage, means they made a commitment to each other, but then they don't keep it. That's when the...
Exactly.
That's when you have all the affairs or the cheating or whatever you want to call it.
Correct.
So they had a commitment, but they didn't stay monogamous.
Mm-hmm. So if that's the principle behind one of the benefits for people to have a desire to get married is that they're making this commitment, but people are making these commitments and they're married and they're not necessarily keeping these commitments. So, so if we're saying that one of the benefits of people getting married is that there's a commitment, that they commit themselves to each other.
Right.
There are a lot of people that are married, but unfortunately, they have committed acts of infidelity.
Right.
So
right.
that commitment is no longer there.
Right.
But if that
right.
was
I know where you're going with that, and I really appreciate that because that's true. Like I say, and I can speak mostly from my own experience. That's where the biggest part of my expertise comes in. So when we're talking about this commitment, we're talking about a certain amount of purpose, you know, in the relationship, in marriage. What are you getting married for? Then we're talking about a certain amount of maturity that the person is going to have and the ability to focus on the purpose that you have, the reason why did you marry, you know, the amount of maturity that the people have, which is, am I at a point in my life to where I have enough discipline, to where I have enough concern, to where I have enough empathy and sympathy to be able to work with my spouse to make sure that the commitment that we have stays valid no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that, to me, that's where the benefit comes in. When both people beyond anything else are focused on the purpose that they have, and then they kind of fold in the ability to be disciplined in the fact that no matter what happens, I'm going to make sure that I do my part to make sure that our commitment stays intact or stays in line.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Michael, what Michael is saying is true, the purpose of why they get married. We have a lot of people who are cheating because their purpose wasn't right in the first place. They really didn't want a commitment. Mm-hmm. They wanted the dream. They wanted the wedding. Mm-hmm. Most people are wedded but are not married. Because they have put dedication into that wedding, but did not turn around and put it in the marriage.
Mm-hmm. So that definitely goes back to, as you guys know, I know you all do a lot of couples counseling. You guys do couples retreats. And so I can just think about working with some of my clients in couples counseling and having seen some of them during their dating phase and then seeing them now as a married couple and how the relationship dynamics change. And for some of the couples, it changed for the better, and for others, it changed for the worse. Things that they were not having problems with at all in their dating, and now they're having these problems in their marriage. And so what seems to come up, and I'm asking if you guys have experienced this in your practice, is that do you ever see that there's a difference between what we say we're going to do versus why we actually do it? Like, I think that's kind of what Zandra just mentioned. Like, what's the purpose of the marriage? Am I marrying this person because I want to have this amazing wedding, or am I marrying this person because I just think I need to get married because it's that time in my life? and I'm not really invested in being married. I'm invested in the idea of being married to someone. Like, do you guys notice that there's?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Guys, we have
I'm jumping in. I had a question for the panel. When we talk about the ceremony and the wedding, excuse me, and people putting a lot of effort into to that, can we differentiate which party that is? Like, I don't know a lot of men that are picking out patterns and dresses and colors. Like, I think that the onus of that is primarily from a feminine aspect, like for the majority of the people.
Ooh,
you know what? Let me answer that, Sean.
Go ahead, honey.
I said more common than not. I'm not ever saying this exclusively, but, you know, I think that the things that I have run across is, you know, women are more in love with the idea of the ceremony and the things that come along with it and not necessarily prepared to do the work that comes after. So it's the glorious day and they're a princess and then, you know, you go off and then you, it's time to really do the work. So
is this Sean the realist from like way back in the day?
Oh yeah, man, you know.
Cool. Well, let me just throw this tidbit out there. You know, I thoroughly believe that we have been miseducated as men in terms of our involvement in marriage ceremony. Number one, because it's not her day, because she's not marrying herself. If it were her day, she would be the only one that's standing up there ready to take vows and all that stuff for herself. But that's not the case. There has to be someone else involved.
Amen.
Michael, I'm so sorry. I just want to tell you guys that that was Stacey Jade, amen. And in the background, in case you were wondering, who was amen?
Okay.
You know, I can't even speak to the weddings that I've been involved in. So that I can only speak to the weddings that I've been involved in, and they have been primarily more bride-centric.
But
sure.
Then you
and
have to think about the people that you hang around, though, Sean.
I was going to say, but so was mine. And I almost didn't show up to my own wedding because of the fact that I was, you know, I was kind of pretty much let out of it. Like, it's her day. I was like, well, how will your day feel? How will her day feel if I don't show up? How are those wedding pictures going to feel? How are those wedding pictures going to turn out when I don't show up?
A pretty narcissistic power play, don't you think?
Yeah, sure. If you want to say narcissistic, that's fine. But see, what a lot of people don't realize is that the whole preparation part, that's like the pregame show for how the dynamics for the wedding, how the marriage itself will flow.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a hands-off approach, you're taking a hands-off approach to the preparation for the rest of your life. Basically, you're setting a precedent for how your wife and her family or husband and whoever, from the husband's perspective, how you're going to be treated. This is her thing.
I had a friend who was getting married, and, you know, I was involved in the ceremony. And after meeting his wife, I recommended that he exit the back door and I would take the heat because that was not a decision that I was in favor of. But he went ahead and married her anyway. And, you know, later on he discovered she had some community sexual tendencies. So, you know.
Wow. I like that community.
Man, that goes
She was a woman for the people.
Right. So I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I saw that she was a woman of the people, but. You know, I was not able to convince him of that at the time. So, you know,
But what Dr. Guy is trying to tell y'all is that what was the purpose of that wedding? Why were they getting married? And here's the biggest setup. Where was pre-marriage counseling? The reason for pre-marriage counseling, so all those red flags can come out. Because when we do pre-marriage counseling.
My preacher's daughter, they did
when
all
we
that.
Do, oh yeah.
No,
but hold
no,
on.
No, 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 no.
Here's what we find.
No, I'm saying that was done.
I can guarantee you.
Really? I'm not talking, not premarital counseling with your church. Don't get me wrong. That's good all counseling, but that's not premarital counseling, because premarital counseling is going to say, to death do you part, you stay married. If he block your eye, you stay married. If he run off with 20 women or you run off with 20 men, you stay married. I'm not talking about counseling through your church.
We're not talking about that.
Counseling. I'm talking about professional premarital counseling.
Real life.
It is very different. It's very different. And
when we deal with real life.
Yeah, exactly.
For that specific scenario, you know, her tendencies were in her, not on her, so I don't think that could have alleviated what transpired.
Oh, my God.
Well,
like,
a rinse through
premarital counseling wasn't going to get what was out of her.
No, but it would have let him know. It may have exposed it. It may have exposed it to him so he could have made a more informed decision. Do I want to still go ahead knowing this about her or is no, this is a real deal breaker?
He wasn't because that adept at picking up on community women tendencies. So.
All I can say is this. There have been some issues that came up while we were doing counseling, and there have been engagement rings given back with a no thank you and too bad, so sad, accompanying the give back of the ring. So that's not that.
Yeah.
So that's not that. Just hold your hand, or we're going to make it work, kind of thing coming from us.
Mm-hmm. I'm definitely one of the people that think marriage is obsolete. The evolution of relationships. Like, you know, I'm against child support too. You know, so I'm against pretty much the legalization or the bringing in of the state in relationships, you know, where it comes to you doing what you're supposed to do for your children or me having to get a license in order to get married. So, you know, I think that there are some, you know, what happens when what?
See, what happens when they
when
don't?
They don't
so
do what they
you said you're against child support. So every person, I'm not going to say man, because I think women, if they're in that place to pay child support, then they should have to pay it, right? So I think every person should take care of their child. But you said they should do what they're supposed to. You're right. But when this does not happen, how are these kids going to be taken care of if you're against child support?
Well, it depends on the people. Every specific scenario. I'm just saying, me personally, I am against involving the government in personal affairs, whether it be child support and or marriage. Those are documents that can be drawn up between the two people. It doesn't have to be something that's mandated.
No, but they can't.
You can do that legally.
But they can't.
That's assuming that everyone is civilized. That's not.
You can.
We don't have that. No, we can't.
You can draw up any legal document. You can draw up legal documents and go through a lawyer, and then your representations can go through court.
Steve, let me prove this to you right now. The situation that this panel, you are saying marriage is obsolete. You are saying you don't believe in child support. We're on the other side saying you must be out of your mind. If we are all in a relationship, how are we gonna bridge this? Without state intervention or somebody, because you're not going to give up your side, and I'm not going to give up mine. So tell me how we're going to draw this up.
So what I'm saying is when you have two people that can agree, because a marriage is a business contract. So if we're talking about is marriage obsolete, what we're talking about is have we as society devolved to the point where we can't create successful business contracts between men and women, like what was originally intended for marriage. Wife was an office. It wasn't involved in the romantic definition that's currently being pursued in the media. You know, diamond rings was something that was marketed. You know, the things that have happened to change relationships is because of how relationships have been marketed. And we've gotten away from the true purpose of what we had for marriage was a contract between a man and a woman about taking care of the children, legacy, providing, those type of things. That is what's gotten muddied. So it is my personal belief
that,
Well, I'm saying because of the high divorce rate, it would support, as Dr. Guy said, it's been muddied to the point where it's more difficult for that transaction to be completed on a long-term basis.
But, you know,
I don't know because my would say transaction is going on 31 years now, and so I don't know how I could even contemplate that being obsolete. It's just the fact that I know what my purpose is as a husband, and I know what it is in relationship to my wife, and it could not be that way if we were not married, because that's where my whole purpose comes from. It's the whole point of where, it's just like when you, I don't know, you may not have worked at a restaurant, but were you married two ketchup bottles or two mustard bottles or two mayonnaise bottles? It's about one of them being so much a part of each other until there's no room or no possibility of separation. But the thing is, with most obsolete-minded people, I believe, has been my experience, that they're not willing to give that much of themselves away. They're too busy fighting for their rights, and they're too busy worrying about, well, I should have this, I should have that, as opposed to how do I keep my part of the relationship strong and in providing for the other person.
Well, I think that's accurate. And I'm not here to attack your marriage, so don't take it personally. I'm glad I'm glad you've been married 30 years. You know, you're a shining example of how things work well. I'm just saying more often than not, it doesn't work well. You know, like whenever there's, and I know Dr. Guy hates when I do this, you know, I like, who's this? You know, they got a new one. The engine's going to be in the back. That doesn't mean that the Corvette before not good. This is just a new model.
So, not saying that your relationship
is not functional. I'm just saying from what I'm seeing from interacting with the people, the millennials, they have a different outlook than some of the baby boomers, Generation X and Y. That's all.
Okay, so basically what you're saying, Sean, is that what you're saying to me kind of sounds like a baby that hasn't been learned how to be potty trained yet. Basically saying I don't have control. There's a new model out here, so the older model might be good, but it's just because I want it, so I have to do it. I'm compelled beyond my ability to control myself to partake of it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. I'll give you an example. So when I went to college, I studied business. There were four distinct business models, like a dog, a cat, you know, like Rolls-Royce, IBM, you know, and that was basically what we operated our businesses on. Were you a low-cost provider or were you luxury? Now, as the internet is taking place, you have more business models. It's not that I'm immature. I'm just aware that there are other business models that are available and work, you know, whether it be, you know, giving things out for free until you're able to sustain your customer base. So there are different ways of doing business. So that's what I'm saying. There are different ways to have a successful relationship. Just because it may not look like what you're describing, you know, it's not this immature model. It's just something that's different.
No,
hold your thought for one second. We do have a caller, so I am going to go to the phone line. You guys are just tuning in. Our topic for tonight, because as you can see, it's a little bit heated. The topic is marriage obsolete? And so we're going to go to the phone lines, and I'm not sure, but your number is showing up as 1111. Caller, you're on the air.
Greetings.
Hi.
Hello.
Greetings. Yeah, hello. Hi. Well, I'm listening to the show. My name is Sapphire, and I'm listening to the show, and I'm really enjoying this particular podcast right here. I want you to know that firstly. But I have a question for the panel, and I want you to know I know the answer to this question, but I want to know if you all know. I believe it could shed some light on what folks are dealing with in the construct of marriage today. So my question is this. Can anyone tell me what the original intention of the marriage contract was for. And I'm coming from an anthropological cultural aspect of it. I'd like to know if you all could tell me that.
Okay.
Well, it depends on which culture or anthropology you're speaking of. There are multiple.
Across all cultures, and I can back this up, there was an intention, there was a reason for the marriage contract.
Other than the, when I think about the original concept of marriage, the contract for marriage, as Sue said, it wasn't for this idea about love, but it was more about the financial gain, or it was for the longevity, keeping the family name. And so they talked about keeping alliances within the family. And so you would have second cousins marrying each other to make sure that the family names lived on. But again, it seemed like it was tied into family finances and not who fell in love with who. But not sure, obviously, how far you're dating back as it relates to family history.
Right, right.
When she's going back to, you're talking about cross-culturally. If you want to go across culture, then most cultures were because one of the family line, like you said, has to be how are we going to carry on our family line, and two, financial, because the family would give the money to the people who were marrying, you know, the marriage box, the marriage trophy of the wife. So it was for the financial gain and the family. That's why they would be families, like you had to be of a certain thing. You couldn't just be anybody. They couldn't just marry anybody, because what does that do to our legacy and our line and our bloodline?
Right, right. Well, let me tell you, I want to share this with you all and get out of your way. You all are partially right. And what you have to do is you have to think about the dowry aspect of it, right? Originally, the intention for the marriage construct, or the marriage construct, if you will, was for the purchase of the female. When you purchased her, you got everything that comes with her. That's her womb, the children, and everything else. It was originally a purchase contract. Now, I argue with the professors about this, but he was able to go back time and time again and prove to me. And when you go to the very Bible, if you understand, it has been changed several times. But outside of that Bible, you can go in the Bible, and even outside of that Bible, you've got to get into the plea books, you will understand that the marriage contract was a purchase agreement. And the original etymology of the word is mirage. Now, when you think about the old movies, when you see a mirage and someone's on the desert, it's dry, what are the first thing they see? A beautiful woman. It was a purchase contract. Just wanted to let you guys know that. So the gentleman that's saying that there are other contracts, I hate to tell you all, but he's actually on the money. And maybe this will determine.
You don't have to hate to say it. It don't have to hurt you to say it.
he is correct when he says that there are other agreements that could be made. But you understand, there is no separation between church and state in this country, although they say it is. Most of your marriages have to do with religion. And I'm going to leave you guys with that.
And Cesar, I'm so glad that you made that comment, because Steve and I definitely have this discussion on and off air all the time about marriage and contract and how it has definitely morphed into what it is that we have now. And Steve comes from a business background, and he talks about the contracts all the time. And so when we talk about marriages now, what he will say, and he might agree or disagree, is that his problem with marriages is that people don't understand their contracts. And for a long time, I was like, I don't understand this concept, because this doesn't make sense to me. Now, after being in the mental health profession, after doing things and working with couples, I now understand what that means, that people don't understand their contracts. Whether we're looking at it from a biblical perspective, from a business perspective, it's a contract that people don't keep. And as a result of them not keeping their contract, we're seeing our divorce rates end up at 50 to 51% ending in marriage, I mean, ending in divorce. So thank you so much, Sapphire, for that.
You're very welcome.
Comment that you had.
Yeah, thanks, Sapphire.
Okay, so thanks, Sapphire. I want to say something to that because, number one, Steve or Sean? It must be Steve.
Hey,
Steve
proved
his point.
You know, the guy that y'all don't like, it always talks crazy.
Here's the thing. You proved your point because marriage is not a business contract. That's number one. And I understand what Sapphire is saying. No. Anyway, so
it
I
is.
Understand what Sapphire is saying, but marriage, let's go back to the original, which is the garden. God didn't give, Adam didn't give no money for her womb or anything else.
Well, that is if
God
that
presented
is, if,
her to
that is
him.
If you come from a Christian perspective, not everybody
I
is
understand.
Going to
that, and that's what I was going to say, because that's where marriage was created. Everything else came after that, because if we Christian,
so
I
what
guess
if I'm Muslim?
Then after the kaboom happened, then the contract came.
So
all
I can't
I
get married if I'm Muslim? What were you talking about? Like, you know, what if
I'm not
a Christian?
You can't.
There's
guys,
no other model for me
guys,
unless I'm going back to Adam and
Eve. We talk about marriage, and if we go biblical, which I know this is not going to sit right with a lot of people, but when they talk about Lilith, who is known as Adam's first wife, and it not being Eve.
Don't do that.
Please,
let's not get into Lilith.
Oh Lord,
what?
That's some of that whole. That's some of that whole.
But you know what?
Whatever.
But you know what? Here's the thing. Whether it was Lilith or whether it was LaRon or whoever, it really doesn't matter, because the whole thing is about if we're going to use contract, then the whole point is how well do you understand what's going on inside your contract? And
it's been
my experience that people don't understand their purpose inside the confines of the contract. And that's where the benefit, that's where the benefit breaks down, because you're not holding up your end, your purpose. She isn't holding up her end, her purpose. Nothing is being fulfilled, and therefore the benefit package that's part of the contract breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think you're correct, but also what happens is that the terms are pretty ambiguous, so people don't have a precise expectation on behavior and outcomes. Like, you know, Dr. Guy gets on me a lot because I say that, you know, you don't get what you deserve in life, you get what you can negotiate. So there are a lot of people that I know that have negotiated some successful, unique situations that don't look traditional, but they've been successful, and they don't look like your marriage at all, and we won't get into anything further than that. But,
That's cool, but I also know people get what they create as well. So negotiate, create, I guess we can use those interchangeably, you know, tomato, tomatoes, if you want. But I know that my wife and I have created something between the two of us because we understood the parameters of the contract that we signed up for.
Right.
Well,
you,
not only
saying,
we understand
you all have been pretty good about being clear in what your marriage looks like. I think what I have run into in my dating process is things have been romanticized and given definitions based on movies and media, which may not necessarily be realistic.
Right.
Like I was talking
right,
to a young lady, and she was telling me a story about some guy who was autistic, but there was one woman that could touch him, and they fell in love, which is possible, but it's just how we don't problem. You know, no autistic people have high sensory perception, and they don't particularly like certain things. So I think what ends up happening is the media creates false images and sets us up for failure. You know, if that is what you buy into for what your marriage is or what it's going to look like. So that's why
absolutely.
I'm saying the marriage model that has been passed down may need revamping, and it may be obsolete as it relates to involving the state. Like,
well,
you know,
I don't know if the state has anything to do with it. But we have, as you said, we've been I call that being miseducated. what you just described. We've been miseducated. And not only that, men aren't necessarily the most manly creatures anymore. And what do I mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean knowing exactly what they want, having the fortitude to stay where they're supposed to be, where they need to be during difficult times,
mm-hmm.
Being able to take leadership and being able to allow a wife to feel comfortable enough to surrender things that aren't necessarily productive on her part, or being able to surrender himself things that aren't necessarily productive for their relationship. And again, that's where the benefit package breaks down. It's
man,
just
I
have
you, and I understand what you're saying, and you've been married 30 years, and you're not out in the streets with these wild wildebeest.
Steve and Michael.
These wild wildebeest. Men have not lost their masculinity. Women are more masculine.
What?
Well,
we need to
step
really?
Up.
And two things can't occupy the same place. So what you'll
wow.
find
well, maybe,
is, as we
well,
talk
maybe,
about
yeah.
as we talk about what society is, you do have more men that are more feminine. A lot of men have been raised by single mothers, and there's
that's
a lot
not
of
an
things
excuse.
That a
that's
let me
not
say
an
it.
Excuse.
I didn't say it's an excuse. It's
that's
the truth.
Not an excuse.
There's
please.
A lot of things a woman can tell a man
pocket.
To do. There's a lot of things
but
a man's
going
to
be a
man,
no matter what.
There's
a man's going
to
be a man
yeah.
no matter who raised them. So don't be putting that
right.
out there. You was raised
well,
by
right
a woman and let that be your excuse. So sorry. No, pack that back up.
Steve and Michael show.
No joke.
I'm sorry.
A call. So, we did have a listener who wanted to say that he agrees that marriage is a contract, but he doesn't believe that marriage is obsolete just because of our divorce rates. But he did say that divorces have become too easy. So I know we were kind of in the mix of a lot of things, but I do want to kind of bring that up. Divorces have become too easy, you guys. So as a result of that, do you think that impacts people's idea behind if I should get married or not?
Sure.
Oh, that's one of the
well, getting
reasons.
Divorced,
oh, yeah.
Getting
if you don't get divorced,
think...
like you change your drawers.
Yeah, sure it
but
does.
But that's one of the reasons that the state and the county have come up with, you know, together in Texas, at least Texas anyway, because they said if you go to marriage counseling, they thought that would be a way to keep those divorces from happening if you went to marriage counseling. Now, mind you, Two Together is not just Christian-based. So they thought if you go to counseling and you get that real-life pre-marriage counseling, then you will look at the situation. It wouldn't be ambiguous, and you would be able to know, well, yes, make a good decision. Yes, I want to get married, or no. Here are the red flags. We're not going to go for this. And so that's how the state tried to regulate it, to try and help people not have so many divorces. But people now, that's why you have a lot of people that's not getting married, because they say, well, why should I get married? That way I don't have to pay for a divorce. But then you end this relationship and there is no contract, so I can do what I want. I can
mm-hmm.
bring you anytime I want, and there's no trust, there's
mm-hmm.
no nothing. And that's, you know, mm-hmm. we say that divorce rates are high, but here's the problem. Who are we looking at as the rate of divorce? Because when people say there's only 2% of the world that has doctorates, and I'm like, I know thousands of people that have doctorates, but 2% of the world is over billion. And so in our little ball, in our little world, what we've been exposed to, maybe it's a high rate. But that doesn't count for the world. That's the problem.
Now, one of the things
well, generally
that
in business, one of the things that happens is you have.
What happens is
you have a contract, and two parties have to have something to lose a lot of times to make the arrangement work. The problem is there's nothing that the parties lose. You can go to counseling, but it doesn't really cost you anything. There's no equity that is going to be really put at stake in some of these situations. You know, you're not going to get stoned. You're not going to get flogged at the town square. You know, they might send some pictures on Facebook, but it's a lot more easy than it used to be.
Well, Steve, this is where time I'm actually going to agree with something you said earlier, which, you know, is rare. But
I don't know why y'all, it pains y'all to agree with me.
But one of the things that you said is that you don't feel like government or should be involved in things related to people's, you know, personal issues. And so I agree with that piece to a certain extent. But when you talk about the divorce rates, until the law changed and created this concept of no-fault divorce, people actually had to have a reason for a divorce. Like, and you had to go to a judge. And the judge had to approve that and say that is actually a reason for a divorce. Before that, you couldn't just wake up and be like, you know what, I am tired of the way you snore. I'm out of this joker. You couldn't do that. Once the law legally said you can now have no-fault divorces, the floodgates opened up and people stopped trying. People no longer decided to fight for their relationships. People no longer decided to invest in these relationships. It wasn't about, you know, oh my goodness, this relationship can't work, or it's something that's bad about marriage. No, people stop trying. People have always had to fight for relationships because relationships are hard work. But if you don't give me a reason to have to fight, then why am I going to do it? So legally, I will agree with you that at some point, sometimes we should be able to handle things on our own. But we can't, because that's who we are as human beings, and we need structure. And they felt like that created structure by saying, go ahead, do as you please, divorce for whatever reason, no-fault divorces. Here we are.
Well, it's not about the structure. It's about the state having another revenue stream. Like, you know, they get a portion to manage the child support. You know, their fees associated with court. Like, it's just another way for the state to get money.
It's not just the state getting the money. It's a woman is finally getting her money.
Well, it's not always a woman.
Well, you're right. It's a way for the parent who is raising those kids to get help to raise them, because they didn't have them by themselves.
Well, we'll do a child support show later, and we'll get into that. Then we'll invite y'all back for that. That's so good.
Oh, Lord. Steve, hold on for a second, honey. Steve, you know why we all kind of like, oh, you mean you're going to agree with Steve? Because your rate of being right is as high as the divorce rate. That's all I'm going to say.
Wow, come on, man.
I'm not right in your house, but I'm right in a lot of other households.
Come on, that's not nice. Play nicely, please.
Okay.
I just like to say that
I'm wrong in the whole world.
You play with like different places
in the world. Like, I can't be wrong everywhere.
he just plays in a different playground. That's all. He plays in a playground that we don't always playing in.
Yeah, you've been married 3 years, so you don't want to come in this playground. There's a lot of strange stuff going on over here.
Yeah, oh, I already know that.
I know. You know, and if I may, I just have a friend that's from Nigeria, and she has told me that she doesn't understand how this American marriage system works. She said, because here, she says, we people only involve the people getting married, whereas in Nigeria, where she's from, there's a whole part of the relationship where the families get together. And the families make sure that this whole thing is going to work. And they build a foundation for the married, for the couple relationship. And when there's trouble, the culture is that you go to your mother, you go to your aunt, you go to your grandmother, you go to your sisters, and they help you form a reference point of how to deal with your troubles. Or you go to your dad, your uncle, your brothers, your grandfather, and they come together with you to help you form some type of network to work through your relationship. And then when those two facets come together, that's even a more powerful resource for that married couple to help them work through. But here, everyone is so independent, and everyone is so self-centered and petty and private, to where you suffer. You live
in a cesspool of agony because pride won't allow you to ask the people who you need to ask for help. And again, benefit versus not benefit.
Well, Nigerians have a real strong culture and heritage, and a lot of resources from generations of rites of passage and things that they do. Whereas here in America, we're still relatively young, and you know, you could have a situation where somebody's mother is competing with a daughter for the boyfriend. Like the worlds are so totally different. Like you can't really, you know, have the same type of structure because of, you know, the slavery aspect and some of the things that, you know, we went through in terms of our social engineering as Black people in America.
Oh, so what you're saying is there's no room for us to learn from that model.
Mm-hmm. No, what I'm saying is the model doesn't work because of how we came here. Like, it works for them because they know their grandfather, their great-grandfather. They have that lineage to go through. Whereas, you know, most people in America maybe can go back to, if they're lucky, the 1900s.
What you would say is the benefit of the marriage relationship.
What I'm saying is it's the benefit of the structure for hundreds of years.
And how did they get that structure from the marriage relationship?
Having multiple wives, from what I recall about Nigerian history.
But would that be a marriage relationship nonetheless?
For what works in their value system.
That
was
a yes or no, not an explanation. Would that be the marriage relationship?
I'm not sure. I'd have to do some.
Okay. No, I'm just, he's talking about, well, we're talking about a framework that doesn't happen culturally, even without the marriage, whether that be married to one wife or whether that be not one wife, but it's still the marriage relationship that's still benefit. Is it obsolete? Well, we see through that example even, how can it be obsolete? Because of the system of resource and benefit that come out of it.
Well, even if we talk about in the 70s when, you know, there was the government programs that paid women who didn't have men in houses. So I'm saying it's two different, it's apples and oranges, it's not the same thing that you're comparing.
But those were systemic issues where they were deliberately trying to keep low-income women in single homes. And so in order for them to receive their government assistance, they could not have a man in the home. So that was really systemic to continue to keep the family divided. But I think that, you know, culture-wise, when you talk about African-Americans in general, we don't have those historical ties to a culture. And so we buy into whatever we do here in the Western society. And in the Western society, we have this concept of you're supposed to now, you know, find this person, fall in love, have kids, and, you know, continue to foster that relationship. But there's no structural pieces that go into that for a lot of people who are now trying to live out that dream because, unfortunately, many people didn't see it growing up. So they're trying to make something happen based on this romanticized idea about what they saw on TV, and life doesn't work that way. So I think that's why a lot of people have become disheartened by the concept of marriage, because they didn't see it growing up. They don't see a lot of their friends staying married, and so they just feel like it's a lost cause. Why invest my time and money in it? And people have given up on it. But I'm going to say I don't believe marriage is obsolete. So, you guys, we have about 2 minutes left in closing. Quickly, what do you guys want to say?
So can I talk before the mother two talks?
What you got?
So I don't believe marriage is obsolete. I just believe that marriage has to go back to a baseline. It's like we have to have a goal. If we have a goal, we know where we're going. If we have no baseline, and what Dr. Guy is saying, people hadn't seen it growing up because a lot of people have given up on it, or they just trashed it. So when do we get back to a standard? Like you talked about the culture in Nigeria. We need to create that culture again where people are seeing what marriage looks like. And that's why we do a lot of marriage counseling, so we can help couples to traverse that, and that they can stay married so they can show that to their children and their children's children. And now we can go back to getting a standard. But with no standard, we are Sodom and Gomorrah, or we are just people out there doing anything in any form or fashion.
Mrs. Rutledge, thank you. Mr. Rutledge, what do you have? You're closing welcome. Out.
2 minutes.
Okay. I do not believe that it's obsolete. I think the hard part is people don't know what they're doing, of course, obviously. And again, in the relationship, there's no one has a real purpose. If it's just to get money or just to come together, it might feel obsolete. If you don't have a goal, if you don't have a map, any place you get on a trip is your destination.
Okay.
That's it for
me. Thank you. Stacey Jade, any close out?
Yes, I do believe that marriage is not obsolete. I do believe that it is transforming and morphing, ergo the new traditions of marriage, where it's transgender or lesbian, LGBT marriages, they're transforming. We are going through a morphosis stage where the baseline has been set of two people coming together because they love each other, and they are changing the definition of what a marriage looks like.
Thank you. And last but not least, please, Steve, what you got? Close out.
Hey, you know, I keep it simple, man. In this life, you get what you negotiate, govern yourselves accordingly, and handle your business.
As always, thank you for my guests on the panel tonight. You guys, don't forget to Facebook it, tweet it, pass it on, tell a friend about Dr. Guy's Monday. Sorry, Dr. Guy's Jumbo Talk. I forgot we're not on Mondays anymore. Everybody have a blessed week, and I'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
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 Love y'all too.